Welcome to Series 2, Episode 8 of Encounter Points. Welcome to the 8th episode of Series 2 of Encounter Points. I'm Ken Hellenius.
And I'm Bill Schmidt.
Last week, Bill, we talked about statues and icons and images, you know, the sorts of things that help us concretize our faith.
It was a great conversation, Ken. But I was left wondering how just looking at images might have a practical effect on our spiritual journeys.
Well, Bill, I think we might have some ideas with which to flesh that out.
Let's go to it. Everyone, and Ken Hellenius, my co-host, welcome to our next Encounter Points episode in our series on incarnational piety. What do you think of that? We're really zooming through them, huh?
Oh my gosh, we are cruising. It's as if it's almost as if we had planned what we were going to do, and we're executing the plan. Almost as if.
I hope nobody really believes that.
No, by no means. No, we have a very smart listenership,
and no,
so they're onto us.
They're onto us.
Yeah, they see behind the curtain.
Very fair. Yeah, very fair. And behind the curtain.
Ignore the man behind the curtain. Or in this case, the men behind the curtain. That's right. I have, you notice here in the studio, I've added a new curtain behind me.
Yes.
That's actually to absorb noise.
Oh, very fine. Very fine.
I need to apologize at the outset here.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the studio, there is a fly buzzing around, which has been in the studio this evening, and I was unable to get him to shoo fly. And
right.
So you may actually hear the fly during this episode. And if so, it's like finding the little baby in the king cake. And that's, by the way, a preview of what we'll talk about in the next episode.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to string people along, but I'm just saying that keep king cake in mind, because next king episode, cake. We're going to have a reference to it.
Oh, neat. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa. Okay.
But what can I say?
Well,
what are we going to talk about tonight?
Yeah, I think tonight.
Not king cake.
Well, yeah, I'm intrigued by that. But I also was hoping to talk about the general rubric of holy habits. And remember that we're talking about incarnational piety, which we take to be a pretty broad definition. One way of describing it is faith that's expressed with all five senses.
Sure.
And indeed, because we are creatures, right? Because we are like that fly, we are God's creation. And
we move about in space.
We can be
smelled. We can be touched. We can be heard. We can be seen.
Exactly.
Felt.
And we often in this series talk about sacramentals as parts of bringing faith into our incarnational everyday lives. But I thought that we agreed that one way that we express it very powerfully and that we'd love to talk about is the idea of this this piety or this responsiveness to God's graces that are coming at us can be proactive, can be from us out to the world. And indeed, ideally, would be something that would be habitual in a sense, and very much a practice of everyday life.
I like that you use the word practice.
Because
they really are, right?
Exactly.
These habits that you're speaking of are practices that we do, and not just the sign of the cross, not just the specific kind of prayerful actions, but you're really thinking more broadly than that. You're thinking about, in many ways, our disposition, the very way that we approach life and community and actions in general.
Yes. I'm thinking of habits of thought, habits of practice, habits of just the way we do things. in a kind of mindful way, even though sometimes mindfulness, the term, is used in kind of odd New Age ways.
Yeah, in an equivocal fashion, yeah.
Yes. But it is good to be mindful in the sense that our faith and responsiveness to God's grace is enacted in brought to mind and, interacts the mind and the body with this kind of faith in action.
Yeah.
And habits are one way of doing that. And they're just as broadly defined as the other terms we're using. That's what makes them wonderful.
Well, I got to admit, you are actually right in my wheelhouse, because when I did my master's studies, I studied the development of the concept of virtue in Western thought,
virtue,
in a
great
books program. And virtue ultimately is a discussion of good habits.
Yes.
So we read about it, for example, in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph 1803.
Yeah.
A virtue is an habitual and firm disposition to do the good. It allows the person not only to perform good acts, but to give the best of himself. The virtuous person tends toward the good with all his sensory and spiritual powers. He pursues the good and chooses it in concrete actions.
Isn't that wonderful?
And this ultimately is to act with piety in every action, right?
That's right.
It is to say, we are seeking the good, and I'm doing so consistently and with even not just in general, but in my every concrete action.
I love it. Yes.
And so, so then the question would become, well, why would we be discussing this in the context of incarnational piety? And it is primarily because what we are talking about is ways of action that bring us closer to relationship with God.
That's right.
And in order to kind of get there, we have to recognize that there are virtues that we can do as humans, that we can do entirely without the promptings of God's grace.
Right.
And then there are those gifts of God that we can all, and those virtues that we can only practice because God directly infuses them into our soul.
Yeah.
So, for example, the ancients, kind of pre-Christian and philosophers spoke of the cardinal virtues, what we know of as the cardinal virtues: prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. These are actions that that any person can do. We read about them in Marcus Aurelius. We read about them in Epictetus, pre-Christian philosophers, who themselves advocated acting, prudently, acting and being courageous and being just towards others, giving them their due. Certainly we read about justice. That's the entire discussion in Plato's Republic is all about the just society.
Yeah.
And this, of course, is hundreds of years before the time of Christ. So it's not specifically a Christian virtue, the idea of justice. Christianity incorporates this, and we believe that justice is a good thing.
Right.
Because, of course, all things were created by God.
Right.
All goods point towards the creator of all, And so these cardinal virtues, as they're called, or human virtues, as the Catechism describes them in paragraphs 1804 and on, 1804 through 1809, these human virtues, anybody can develop, whether or not you have the gift of faith.
Yeah.
And it's important that I describe faith as a gift there, because there are three virtues that the church recognizes and upholds that we read about, of course, in St. Paul, that are the theological virtues. So the human virtues are those prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance.
Right.
But the theological virtues are faith, hope, and love.
Yeah.
Of course, we read most often of these in Paul's letter to the Corinthians, where he says, faith, hope, and love are the three, the greatest gifts.
Yes.
But in the end, faith and hope pass away. Love alone remains.
Indeed, the greatest.
Because God is, as St. John tells us, God is love.
Yeah.
And so ultimately,
that's eternal.
We will be with God, who is love.
Yeah.
We need no gift of faith anymore, because we see God in front of us. We need no hope, because we don't have to trust anymore. We see, and we are currently experiencing in the beatific vision, that which was promised, which we were holding and trusting for, which we were hoping for.
Yeah.
So ultimately, the virtues are, again, these habitual dispositions to do the good, habitual and firm. And right. that's the important thing, because it's not just, you know what, I'm going to do the good this particular time.
Right.
No, it's throughout and consistently a firm disposition. The habit is, you know, we use the word habit in when we talk about religious garb.
Yes.
Sisters and priests, sisters and brothers wear habits.
Yes.
That they put on over their bodies because it covers their nature. But it becomes part of their identity once they are wearing the habit, such Indeed. That when you see Sister Mary Elephant, as yes. Cheech and Chong, or you see Brother Maynard wearing his habit, he's no longer just Maynard, the guy that you knew. Now, with the habit on him, his whole identity is subsumed into the habit, which is part of his identity now. Yeah. It's Brother Maynard.
Yes.
Our habits, like the virtues, become part of our character.
Isn't that
something?
They
become part of who we are. People know us as the just Bill Schmidt, or they know us as the prudent, I wish, Ken Hellenius.
Oh, I think
you know,
that's true.
Things like this.
Right.
And so the habits are things that we put on over our nature that begin to transform us as peoples and and become part of our character.
And I like that thought about two different kinds of habits, some of them being more man-made, as it were, and some being totally reliant and responsive to God's grace. Because I think there's even that question about the word habit. Is it something that defines practices that we go through kind of mindlessly and routinely, and that we've kind of just created for our own convenience? Certainly everybody has certain habits
right.
like that. But I'm thinking more, as we talk about incarnational piety, of habits of responsiveness to grace, where and that's a habit of mind as well as of action. You're going about your day, you're going about your life with certain standards in mind and certain routines or at least accepted standards. But you can't do it just by yourself. No piece of clothing in the case of the religious order, or no purely man-made decision is going to allow you a truly pious habit when it comes down to these transcendental virtues. Huh?
Courage would probably be among the easiest ways to describe the process of development of a habit.
Oh, interesting.
Because, for example, the fight or flight response.
Right.
Somebody brandishes a weapon in front of you, pulls out a knife on you when you're wandering on your walk through the University Park Mall.
Right.
Somebody pulls a knife on you. Your first instinct is likely going to be to run.
Right.
And to get out of that situation.
Right.
Whereas if you are trained as a police officer, a peace officer, or in the military, where you have continually practiced how to, take stock of the situation and to steel yourself in the actions that you need to do to disarm an attacker.
Yeah.
All of these things that you've practiced over and over and over again have become a second nature unto you.
Yes.
They have become part of your new nature. They are the habit that you have put on over the fight or flight response.
Right.
The flight response particularly.
Right.
You've strengthened the habit of courage to, when faced with this situation, you respond to what seems naturally in that moment, because you have developed the virtue of courage, such that you can reach out and grab the knife and disarm your attacker. At first, you know, me, I'm a weak, non-courageous individual. I would run like a person running away.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe that. I would run. I would probably soil myself first, and then I would run,
right.
you know, or maybe at the same time. But the reality is, if I had gone through, you know, jujitsu training or whatever it might be,
right.
I have developed a new habit.
Yes.
I have strengthened myself and made a second nature, which is really another way to describe a habit.
Yeah.
And now my reaction is not one of run away, but my reaction is deal with this situation right here. Stand courageously and change the situation rather than run.
Yes, yes.
This is, you know, the great psychologist, and I say great, the armchair psychologist, William James.
Yeah.
Wrote in his book, Psychology, his introduction to psychology in the late 19th century, he wrote a lot about the development of habits and talks about the plasticity of our young minds. Like when we're young, it's easier to develop habits because we're not set in our ways yet.
Right.
Our pathway, our neural pathways are yet plastic.
Yes.
We and the more we do a particular action in a particular way, the more we stand, you know, 16 feet from the basket and stand in one spot and shoot the ball at the basket over and over, we are strengthening that neural pathway for our arm to shoot the basket and sink that basket every time. The first 300 times, it's not going to be the same as it is after time number 700
right.
or time number 1,000 because we have caused our everything to feel just right, such that when we release the ball, we know exactly that one is going in the basket.
Yeah.
This is the process of developing a habit such that becomes a second nature. And we can do this with prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. Here's the other thing, though.
Okay.
God, as we mentioned before, the theological virtues, those are gifts of the Lord. They can only be infused. Faith, hope, and love can only be given to us by God. We can't develop them ourselves.
Yes.
God can also infuse prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance for a particular occasion,
yeah.
right? We hear about, you know, the young child whose dad gets run over by the car and the child somehow lifts the car off of dad.
Yeah, yeah.
That kid has not been working out every day to make that happen. In that particular moment, they had a supernatural infusion of strength to do that thing that needed to happen right then and there.
Yeah.
They may never lift another thing in his life. Probably
right.
throws his back out, to be honest.
Indeed.
But these moments of God can infuse courage in us. God can infuse prudence in us so that we make the right decision when faced with a difficult situation.
Yeah.
That we make the right decision, even though it's not our habit to act prudently. God can help us make the right decision not to have that extra beer before we get in the car and drive home.
Oh, indeed. Yeah.
Be an example. So these are sorts of things that come up in the discussion of habit
yeah.
and of virtue. And I want to strongly recommend that, as I mentioned, there's a whole section in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, Part 3, Article 7, on the virtues that really helps unpack a lot of these. They also discuss the gifts of the Holy Spirit, which are in many ways similar because there are seven of them as well. And
right.
the church tradition holds up this idea of the gifts of the Holy Spirit being, we actually first meet them in Isaiah chapter 11,
mm-hmm.
Wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, piety, and fear of the Lord.
Yeah.
Some of those, of course, correspond directly with virtues.
Right.
You know, wisdom in some ways is the idea of, is knowing what properly to love.
Right.
Understanding and knowledge deal with faith because they're like, not only can we learn about God, but we can also then begin to trust that God is going to do what God has promised.
Right.
Counsel, which is right judgment, is prudence, in another
word.
Right. Fortitude is, of course, the actual human virtue of fortitude or courage.
Right.
The gift of the fear of the Lord corresponds to hope. Fear of the Lord is not afraid of God, but fear of the Lord is recognizing that God promises and God is trustworthy.
That's a good way of defining it. Yeah.
And then piety, the gift of reverence, really is another way to describe that.
Right.
As I mentioned before, it corresponds to the virtue of justice
mm-hmm.
because we give back to God, the Creator, what God is properly due. And that is the act of piety. So everything we do when we are acting piously. And that doesn't mean smarmy piety. It
right.
means actually acting with right relationship towards all created things and recognizing that we are all created together by a loving Creator.
Yeah.
That's piety.
Yeah.
And that's part of justice.
Yeah. So we're really saying that while those three habits of faith, hope, and charity have this special relationship or reflect this special relationship of receiving the infusion
yeah.
of this special grace. from God. It's kind of like all habits, especially to the degree that they're virtuous, need responsiveness to God's grace. Habits at a more mundane human level can be merely habits that incline us toward being receptive mm-hmm. to either God's grace, God's instruction, or in some of the other examples you were using, you know, receptivity to a good coach who taught us the necessary martial arts to fight off
the attacker
or yeah. whatever. So people tend to think of habits, or at least I think many people think of habits as just routines that we fall into and that kind of have no particular meaning and are self-centered in some way. I think the Christian, especially one mindful of incarnational piety and the way God can and does work in our lives, that the habits are just a beautiful everyday way of receiving and listening and cooperating with the ways God's working in our lives directly and indirectly through other people, etc. So that's mindfulness rather than mindless routine.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me struck me as an important distinction to make about habits. And also, if we don't have habits, another thought that occurred to me was, well, I'm a creature of habit, partly because I tend to be absent-minded on various things, and forming habits has been a kind of precautionary, preventive measure that I'm always going to double check that I locked the door when I leave.
Right,
Or things like that. My point there is that thank God for habits, even some of them that become mindless over time, because my fear is that if we don't have habits, especially as Christians, we're leaving a kind of vacuum of randomness in our lives. Not that, having this OCD approach to always checking that I locked the door is necessarily the ideal of life, but I know that if I left that vacuum of not having formed that habit, there'd be quite a possibility that one day in the next 10 or 20, I would, by gum, leave the door unlocked.
Yeah.
And the same way with the virtuous habits, and perhaps especially with the true virtues of faith, hope, and charity, where we dare not kind of reject or ignore those gifts from God, because we're leaving a vacuum then that can really be filled with the world, the flesh, and the devil is, I think, the line, right?
Yep.
There's got to be something there.
Right. That void will be filled.
The void will be filled.
Yep.
Yes.
I think that's an excellent way to end the conversation,
okay,
to be honest,
okay.
Because I think that's ultimately what this is about is practicing and developing good habits, virtuous habits, in order that the acts of faith, hope, and love are truly like unto second nature. Because ultimately,
yes,
as St. Paul says, that's all that matters in the end,
yes,
is faith, hope, and love.
Yes.
And ultimately of those, only love remains.
And if love is not second nature, or indeed first nature, then we're not going to have that saintly identity
That's right.
That makes us part of the heavenly kingdom. So now's the time to form that habit, huh?
I like it. And I'm going to make sure that in the show notes we have this wonderful quotation from William James that basically says, essentially, if I could tell young people the urgency of them developing good habits now so that they avoid a hell far worse than any preacher could ever preach at them later, I would do that, they might understand the importance of developing good habits while you are young.
Oh, my goodness. And it includes,
but really the takeaway should be start today.
Yeah.
Don't put it off.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't just do what feels good. Form some good habits with a sense of purpose.
Absolutely.
And the ultimate purpose as well.
Amen.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a very helpful way of understanding it and kind of a pointed reminder. Oh, speaking of reminders, I think we'd better go, Ken, because I think I left the door unlocked.
Thank you for joining us for this week's chat. You can subscribe to hear future episodes at our website, encounterpoints.com. Our theme music is Leaves by Airtone, licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution License. We hope to encounter you in the next episode of Encounter Points.